Church, for the next 3 weeks, I want to focus on, healing. I remember years ago in an elders meeting upstairs in our conference room, and we were having an elders meeting. It was three former elders. And we were discussing the possibility of creating a midweek worship service or a Friday night worship service. And we were just kind of conversing about some ideas. And I remember Carl Ward, rest in peace, Carl. I remember Carl Ward, one of the elders, said that he was driving somewhere and he saw this sign in front of a church that said, "Come for a time of rest and healing." Come for a time of rest and healing. And I remember Carl Ward in this meeting being as animated as I have ever seen him in a meeting. I mean, Carl's a pretty quiet, a reserved guy. He's got a really loud laugh, if you know Carl Ward. But in meetings, he's pretty reserved, laid back. But he was really animated. And I remember him saying repeatedly, "Rest and healing. Man, I want that." And somehow that just, you know, entered into the conversation of, you know, what type of service we should have for church. And I don't know why Carl expressed that he wanted rest and healing. I don't know if he was having some physical problems or spiritual problems or mental problems. I don't know, but he was very adamant that he wanted rest and healing. And then we began to engage in this conversation for probably an hour about this desire that everyone has for healing and wellness and rest. And I don't remember all that took place. I do remember that at the end of that meeting, we spent time in prayer. We prayed for a long time. And if any of you knew some of our former elders like Chuck Llewellyn, we prayed for a long, long time. It was a beautiful thing. I'll never forget that. Nothing came out in terms of the extra service, but we did talk about the place of healing and the areas in our lives that are in need of healing. And there were stresses and issues that induced mental strain and physical problems and spiritual problems. I'm pretty sure that we spent time praying for some of those stresses. I'm pretty sure that in that meeting we were actually beginning to confess and share some issues of mental strain. I remember that wasn't too far removed from a period in Reynoldsburg where we didn't have busing for kids to go to school, and I was in charge of taking my daughters to school, and I remember having to drive one, you know, daughter to Taylor Road, then having to take another daughter to Liberty Christian School, and I had it timed so well that, I mean, I literally had minutes to work with in order to make sure that both kids got to school on time. We could not leave the house late. We had to, you know, I had to make sure that I had some alternate routes to divert some of the bad traffic, you know, going into Columbus. And I remember one day I dropped one of the daughters off, and I remember, you know, just going through months of this, and, you know, not to mention just all the other stresses of life. You know, there was some stuff going on at church, and I remember driving in the parking lot. I had a yellow Ford Escape. Y'all remember I used to drive that yellow Ford Escape? And I remember I parked in the parking lot, and the car was running, and I sat there and just started to weep uncontrollably. I was fried, church. I was so stressed out. Any of y'all ever kind of just been there? You ever been there where, you know, You're driving to the parking lot at work and you sit in the car for an extra 10 minutes because you're like, I don't know how I'm going to go in there and do this today. And it was also a way of you protecting your coworkers that day. Because had you went in, as soon as you got there, somebody might have got some business from you. Because, man, just mentally, you just weren't there. At the end of November and beginning of December, we will start our Advent season leading up to Christmas, as we do every year. In the meantime, we will close what is the Christian year and prepare for Advent by considering our desire for healing and wellness. Health and wellness is a multi-trillion dollar entity business. Tons of products, books, seminars, memberships, and activities are marketed to men, women, and children in an effort to address their mental, physical, and spiritual ills. This series is not an attempt to endorse or debunk the claims of these products, but rather explore God's interest in our mental, physical, and spiritual wellness. He is indeed interested in the wellness of his children. We will conclude each sermon every week with just a passionate and directed prayer and an appeal to God for healing and wellness. Now, I am taking a cue from our previous series as I was thinking about, you know, what can we do in November, sort of in this median time between this series that I was in, Thessalonians, and Advent, which I have planned out. And I read this passage in Thessalonians. It's from 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 23 through 24. And Paul, writing in this benediction, this benedictory prayer, he says, "May the God of peace himself sanctify you entirely, and may your spirit and soul and body be kept sound and blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. The one who calls you, the one who calls you is faithful, and he will do this." Now, I want us to look at this text again because there's something that just jumped off the page at me. It stuck out to me, and it just stuck with me. I just could not get past what Paul included here in this writing. In verse 23, "May the God of peace sanctify you entirely," like holy, everything, not just a peace, but entirely. And he goes into this idea of what it means, and entirely means by entirely. He says, "Your soul, your spirit, and your soul, and your body." Your spirit, your soul, and body. "Be kept sound and blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and the one who calls you is faithful, and he will do it." He'll do this. In this benedictory prayer, Paul makes an appeal to a God who is able to sanctify the entirety of human. God is faithful, and he will do this. Now, this speaks of the confidence that we can possess regarding our God. He's not just any God. He is a God who is faithful to his promises, and he is a God who is able. My God is able to do immeasurably more than all we can ever ask or imagine, according to the power that is at work within us. And Paul describes this idea of being blessed or sanctified in its entirety. The entirety of humanity includes the soul, which in Greek is the word psyche or psuche, body, which in Greek is the word soma, and spirit, which in Greek is the word pneuma. And you may hear some English words, pneumatology, you know, the study of the spirit, pneumonia, or soma, that's body, and psyche, psychology, study of the mind. Something of note here is in the Hellenistic world, full of philosophers and great thinkers, the Apostle Paul is believed to be the first person to use this trio of words to describe the full being or the whole of human beings. Greek thinkers often considered a duality of humans, sometimes called the dichotomous view, consisting of soul and body. Soul and body. It is quite a remarkable assertion by Paul to suggest that the whole of human is not just soul and body, but soul, body, and spirit. And this is what we are going to do for the next 3 weeks. We are going to look at the whole of human, body, soul, and spirit. And by soul, I'm going to refer to as mind, taking our cue from the Greek word psyche, psyche. And so let's start with the soul, or the mind. Psyche. In recent years, there have been a surplus of celebrities and athletes and famous people who have gone public with their battle with mental illness. What has become public due mostly to their status in society is a battle that many are dealing with but are afraid to admit it. The stigma associated with mental illness often hinders folks, particularly Christians, from addressing their illnesses and asking for help and healing. Church, this is a serious issue affecting millions of people. One out of three Americans, adults, suffers from some form of mental illness. It makes sense. You know, jobs are stressful. Unemployment, stressful. Dealing with COVID is stressful. Families are stressful. Schools, stressful. Have you seen the price of gas? Stressful. Have you seen the price of meat in the grocery store? My family, we try to have like beef and steak once a week. Man, have you tried to buy a package of steaks or ribeyes? It's stressful, church. A value meal at McDonald's. Lord, I went to McDonald's a few weeks ago and got a value meal. And I mean, the stress of waiting in line for like an hour with there only like three cars in line. But that's a whole separate issue because, you know, they can't find people to work there and it's just taking longer. But then I'm like, hey, can I get a small quarter pounder with cheese meal, you know, small fries, small drink? And the lady over the speaker was like, yeah, that'd be like $9. I was ready to pull off. Stressful. The economy, inflation, we're stressed out. By the way, we're going to talk about eating too many Big Macs next week when we talk about the body. But that's a separate issue. The economy, society, trauma, stress-inducing factors. For some of us, it's a rough go about it. And it's impacting our emotions. It's impacting our mind and our mental health. That some of us deal with mental illness should be enough. But what adds to the struggle is that there are people who stigmatize it. If you are mentally ill, there's something wrong. You're broken. You're odd. You're not normal. And that's when people who deal with mental illness will take a cue to just be silent about it. I'm not going to share it. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to bother. Further, some who in this realm, they'll bemoan those who are mentally ill and they seek therapeutics. There are religious institutions and churches that says it's a sin to take medicine for mental illness or to see a therapist or a counselor. So again, people will stay silent. Let me say this without qualification. People of faith have always struggled with their mental health. It's all throughout Scripture. It's all throughout the Bible. There's no way to read the book of Psalms and not come away with an understanding that people in the book that wrote some of these Psalms battle with mental illness. Psalm 88, which some would regard as the darkest of all of the Psalms in the whole 150 Psalms that we have in our Hebrew Bibles. Psalm 88, I mean, listen to some of the words from Psalm 88. Lord, you are the God who saves me. Day and night I cry out to you. May my prayer come before you. Turn your ear to my cry. I am overwhelmed with troubles, and my life draws near to death. Verses 8 and 9, you have caused my companions to shun me. You have made me a thing of horror to them. I am shut in so that I cannot escape. My eye grows dim through sorrow. Every day I call on you, O Lord. I spread out my hands to you, crying, eyes puffed up from tears. Verse 16, your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me all day long. They surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. Darkness is my closest friend. Church, that is someone who is going through it. They are battling. Church ought to lead the charge and be in a place where we can talk about mental health, mental illness, and mental wellness. No one need to be ashamed of their mental illness. Great men and women of faith, even women and men in the Bible, they dealt with mental illness. I'll talk about one later on. But for now, I want to hear from one of our own. I want us to watch a short video that has represented the efforts all over the country, all over the world, the attempt to get people to start talking about mental illness and getting rid of one of the impedances of people talking about it, and that is us stigmatizing mental illness. Let's watch this video, and then we're going to hear from one of our members.
You know that feeling where your thoughts scare you or make life tough? Sometimes it feels like no one else in the world has those thoughts or feelings. No one seems to know how difficult it is to deal with your feelings. And it's not easy to share your deepest secrets. You might think something is wrong with you. Or you might worry what other people think. And all of that makes your thoughts and feelings worse. Our culture has created this environment of shame. Until the 1960s, society sent people away if they had challenges managing their thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. Over time, we learned that we didn't have to be afraid. We learned how to help people get better. We became hopeful. But there are remnants of those images in our culture today, which is why some people still feel uncomfortable talking about it. The stigma has taken new forms too. With more access to more people all the time, it can seem like the world is telling us it's not okay to be anything but perfect. The truth is, everyone has thoughts or feelings that can be hard to deal with. So why do we make it so difficult on ourselves by judging others who could be going through the same challenges we are? What if, instead of seeing labels, we saw people who are struggling and could be there for them so they didn't feel so alone? What if we looked past our fear of mental health and started to talk about it in a constructive way? What if, as a society, we used empowering words and healthy images to help people feel supported? Maybe then, more of us could feel comfortable telling others when we're having a hard time. Maybe more people would get the help they need. And maybe one day we won't have to talk separately about mental health and physical health, but just health. The truth is, each of us has the power to change our culture. Will you join us?
We can break the stigma. That's what I'm hoping we can do starting today and starting with the help of my brother, Travis Menzler. Travis Menzler has been a member here for over 10 years, 11, maybe even 12 years. I remember baptizing Travis and Wendy's son, Alex. That was a beautiful day. Little tiny Alex with this tiny squeaky voice. he still kind of has a squeaky voice. But Travis, so we've been in COVID for like a year and a half, and it may be that there are folks here who don't know who you are. So just for a moment, like, who are you? Tell us about yourself. Tell us about your family. Tell us about your occupation.
Well, my name is Travis.
Make sure you speak in the mic, too.
Okay. two sons, Alex and Nathan. Alex attends Harding University, where he'll be graduating this December. And thank God we found out that he got a job, so he's employed after he graduates. I'm very proud of that moment. I've got a younger son, Nathan. He attends Wright State University. He is presently on the bowling team. He's not here today because they're doing a bowling tournament here in Columbus. So my life is kind of revolves around them. I have a sister and a mom who live in Wheeling. I've got a brother who lives here in Columbus. And then I have a stepbrother who lives in the Chicagoland area. So come from a home that's, you know, a little bit crazy, but, you know, we made it through. I'm here today, you know, with Wendy, and, you know, kind of one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. And you work at the VA?
Yeah, I actually held two different careers. The first 15 years after I got out of the military, I spent it in manufacturing. Chicago and Columbus, and then I became a nurse with the support of Wendy. I quit my job, and I went ahead and went to school. I'm a nurse. I've been over at the VA now, going on 11, 12 years, where I am the manager of our urgent care center.
So it has been a hectic, that's probably to say the least, over the past year and a half, dealing with COVID and you managing this health system and overseeing vaccinations and veterans. And so would you say that you have a high stress job?
I do have a high stress job. I'm privileged enough to work with a lot of great people, and the stress, we try to minimize it as much as possible. Can you hear me now?
Is it on?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I do have a high-stress job, but there are, you know, in the medical field, my job is probably at the middle of the road of stress levels. You know, there are others out there that deal with the life and death of COVID on a daily basis. My sister was in a long-term care facility working at Acuity. She saw it on a daily basis. So, you know, I was blessed. I mean, I was on the front lines, but there were others who had it worse than I did.
So several months ago, just you and I have been talking, talking about various issues, and the topic of mental illness was one of those issues. And one of the things that you shared was a desire to kind of just share your story and to offer resources and helps to those who might be struggling with mental illness. So give us some background, like what has brought you here? Tell your story. Tell about your struggle and what has brought you to this moment.
I would have to say about 5 years ago, probably. I was dealing with probably my second bout of insomnia. And one night, I just wanted to sleep. And it didn't matter to me if it was 8 hours, if it was forever. I just had it. For some reason, I didn't do it. I went to work the next day, and I was working at the VA at the time. And what kind of drove home was, I worked in primary care at the time, and we have to do a form of a depression screening, mental health screening. We do it on everybody. Well, when you start answering the questions all positive, I think it was time for me to reach out. So after that evening, I reached out to my first counselor, and within 24 hours, I was in seeing him. I spent 2 years with that doctor. He helped me get out of the big hole I was in, the crisis mode. I remember about 3 or 4 months into it, I sat down with him and I said, was I in crisis? Wasn't I in crisis? Because the problem is, you forget what normal is. If you would ask me what normal was at that time, it was what I was feeling, because I felt it every single day, 24 hours a day, some better, some worse. But even on my better days, it was still worse than, if you want to say, compared to everybody else. You know, this world likes to compare things. So I asked him, I said, where was I? He goes, you were full-blown crisis. So, you know, I don't put numbers to it. I don't put, you know, any adjectives to it. I was in crisis. We spent, like I said, I was very blessed with somebody that helped get me out of that hole. But after about, I'd say, and I was going every week. I had a standing appointment every week. I'd go. But then it started getting to me monotonous. It wasn't helping me. I'd walk in and, you know, we never kind of started getting to the crux or the reason I was feeling the way I was. He always wanted to keep bringing up. I mean, those around me know that I'm an alcoholic. I have I dealt with a porn addiction. And that's what he wanted to concentrate on all the time. So we never got to the point to where he was really helping me. So I figured, you know, I can handle this on my own. I know more than he does. So I left my counseling for a while. Then I kind of started feeling, I better get back into something. So I tried what they call is like cognitive behavior therapy. It wasn't for me. It took me two sessions with that one, because I was advised, here, read this book, and then we'll talk about it. Well, I didn't want to read a book. If those of you around me know me, I hate reading anyway. So that one stopped. Well, then, it's just my decision. I stopped going. And then I hit a little bit, about a year later, I hit another, like, panic mode. Similar to what Dion was stating, everything just, you know, piled up on me, and I had just done had it. Again, I let the thoughts overtake my mind, and, another thought came there, and I said, you know, I can't keep doing this. I need to figure out how. I need, you know, if anybody, you know, if you work in the medical field or if you work as an engineer or anything, you always have a plan going forward. I didn't have a plan. I was just kind of trying to do it all on my own. And during this whole time, when I started going through my crisis, I could keep it away from all of you. It was not that hard. I learned how to be the loneliest person in the world in the middle of the Super Bowl. I could easily, it didn't matter. I could put on that fake smile. I could say, yeah, it's all good. But it wasn't. I mean, I was fighting it every day. That was even with, you know, things that I enjoyed to do. You know, I coached both my boys, though it might have been a struggle some days not to choke them, but, you know, because of how they were acting. But, you know, I was at that point. You know, I was dealing with the alcoholism. I was dealing with the porn addiction. And it's like, what else you want to throw at me? You know, then work, you know, as a nurse. You know, I was dealing with, you know, so, you know, I started my career at the CCU, which is the cardiac care over at Mount Carmel East. You know, I remember a day that we lost more people. I did more codes that one day than I have the rest of my career. That's saying a lot. I mean, I work, you know, where I work. But then I met up with, I reached out, and I was like, yeah, I can't do this. So I'll give you a funny story on this one. So I reached out to Alpha Counseling. I was partnered up with a lady. Her name's Lisa. I love her to death. And I remember the first time I walked in, because, you know, you only see what's on. You don't get to talk to people. You only see their bios. Well, her bio, the first couple sentences stated, works with postpartum depression. I'm sitting there, I'm scratching my head, and I walk in, and I look at Lisa, and I said, you know, I'm not a woman, right? I don't have postpartum. She goes, no, we got this. So, I can tell you, what we started to do then wasn't so much any of the other stuff. We acknowledged it. We know it's there. I know what's going on. I know how to handle it. What we started dealing with was how I was looking at things, not how I perceive people from looking at me. She has helped me over the course of the last, I think it's been 18 months. I was meeting with her weekly. Then we went to bi-weekly. Now we're about once, we're roughly about every 3 weeks, 4 weeks now. But at any given time, if I feel I'm out of whack, I pick up the phone, I call her, and we set up a meeting. We do it over the video. But she has helped me finally start realizing some of the tools that I have, and she started to work with me on the tools that I need. Because understand, just because you go through whatever therapy that you do, you have to have resources, because therapy is only as good as what you're learning and what you're taking out of it. And like I said, I've been through three different types of therapies. Not every therapy works right. I'm not here saying what I'm doing is the correct way. I'm saying what I'm doing took me a while to figure out this is what I wanted. But also, I don't discount any of the other types of therapies that are out there. I just feel, my feeling is, and the reason I came to Dion was, we need to acknowledge it. You know, we need to say that people suffer from within, and we need to have that ability. You know, I don't want answers from you. I just want you to listen. I have people who will help me develop answers, but some days I just need, and I think one thing that is really, I think the biggest thing this has taught me with Lisa is, when I'm having a bad day now, I can go to Wendy and express it correctly. I can give you an instance. A couple weeks ago, at that time I was running two of the biggest departments in our facility, and you know, one's a 7-day, 365 day a year, and I'm responsible for misstaffing it. And then the other one is the largest. It's got a lot of issues going on. Well, I had, in the middle of the night, I woke up, I had a panic attack. Yes, I have panic attacks, anxiety attacks. So then a couple days later, Wendy and I, we always take our dog on a walk. And I told her, I said, you know, so it hasn't been a good couple days. I had a panic attack. But before, I would have never stated that. I would have never told Wendy any of that. It's not as good as I think it probably should be, or probably that, you know, and I'm not going to speak for Wendy because I've learned that, you know, that's, you know, not my place. But, you know, for me to be able to say I had it, and for her to just listen. What I have to do is I say, listen, I don't need answers. I just need somebody to listen. And now she listens, so she is now part of that process for me.
That was a lot. And if I could just maybe restate or summarize some of the things that you said, I think is helpful for us to hear. There were some things you were going through that you recognize, and certainly there were moments where you probably debated with yourself whether or not you were going to go get help or not go get help, but you eventually did. You tried multiple things and you found something that works for you. You know, you don't like to read books, but for someone else, that may have been so there is no one size fit all no. Therapy. And you said that. Something else you said is that not dealing with your mental illness resulted in some other ancillary behaviors. You know, you talked about alcoholism and porn addiction. I would imagine that your relationship with your family was impacted. But coming, you know, through this, what you have discovered are tools and resources and support systems like your wife. Why do you think why do you think it's easier for people to stigmatize mental health rather than be helpful, be an ear, and be a support?
Well, I think it's just, I mean, human nature is to fix things. I think we have talked about it, the roles that we play. in people's lives. You know, if you're in the medical field, your job is to fix it. Not always listen, but fix it. You come up with a plan, you do it. And so from my standpoint, you know, sometimes we don't need people to fix it. We just need people to listen. But also, I think what I have learned is I have to set the boundary. I have to set the expectations. Because if I go to somebody and I say, hey, you know, this is what's going on, the first inclination is always going to be, okay, here, let me give you some advice on how to fix it.
Yeah.
But if I go to somebody and say, you know what, I'm really having a bad day, can you just listen?
Yeah.
I can tell you this. I work with a lady, and I actually, she's my boss, and she's been my boss now. I don't know how long we've kind of been together now. I think 6 years. She's that kind of person for me. I am able to walk into her office when I'm having a bad day at work, shut the door and say, can you just listen? We don't offer advice. We just kind of, you know, we let it go by the door shut and we move on. Mm-hmm. But what that does is that help, that gives me that de-escalation I really need. And she does it with me now. You know, we're kind of partners in this whole thing. And it's been nice. Robin has just been somebody that, you know, I've been blessed to have around me because she understands what's going on with me because I have shared a lot of that. But also she's a nurse. Her background is to fix it, but she will just sit there and listen to me. Mm. And then when I'm done, we kind of have a laugh. We poke fun at whatever, you know, I'm really up. Because most of the stuff that you get upset about, it's not worth it. Mm. So, you know, we kind of finally come around it. But, yeah, it's all just listening. You know, we have people that we trust to help, quote, unquote, fix us or provide those tools. And some days that tool is just finding somebody to listen.
And so I think what I'm hearing is part of the reason why we stigmatize mental health is because we want things to be right. And I think sometimes we just get uncomfortable with this idea that, you know, someone we love is not, you know, not feeling well. And it's better for us to stigmatize it or to, you know, fixate on solutions rather than, you know, trying to be a support and seeking solutions that may not be fixing it. As we kind of wrap up here, I wonder if you could offer the church as a whole, and I think baked into his story are a lot of suggestions and helpful hints for us as a church family in dealing with mental illness. but What advice would you give, you know, Christians, the church, as we try to help men, women, and children who struggle with mental illness? What parting words of advice? As one who not only struggles with mental illness, but you now are in a position where you are helping others with mental illness. You aren't always there, but what advice would you give?
That one's kind of hard. For myself personally, you know, and it's still out there. I mean, you get judged. I'm sure, you know, there will be people that come out of this that says, you know, oh, no, you know, this is what's going on. You know, is he really a Christian? You know, he has flaws. Well, show me somebody who doesn't. But the thing is, you know, being there, but also when you ask somebody and they offload, you know, sometimes it's not pretty. You can't judge them on that. For those who have been around me for years, you know, I have a colorful language sometimes when I get upset. And you can't be offended if somebody is venting. You can't judge them on that moment in time. You need to back off the judgment route or, you know, and just accept it for what it is and be an ear to listen. If they ask you for help, then, you know, you don't have to have, you know, I don't, people don't need to have the answers, but you need to be willing, if you ask that question, to start walking the journey, no matter where it leads you. Mm-hmm. You know, that journey might lead you to escorting them to a hospital to get care because they're in crisis. It might be they might ask you to just sit and talk. And now that talk might last you all night long. But you have to be willing to do it without judgment and without repercussions. Mm-hmm. No expectations. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I think the biggest fear when I was going through it was, what was everybody going to think about me? Now, mm-hmm. at this age, you know, at this point in my life, I shouldn't care about that. But it still does play that part in your mind.
Yeah.
So you just have to be willing to be open to something you don't want to hear. I mean, if you're just asking to walk by, don't ask. Just walk by. Yeah. Say, hi, how you doing? Yeah. Just keep going. Keep moving.
Yeah.
But if you truly do care and you do want to help out and you ask them, then be willing to walk the walk and talk the talk. And, you know, like I said, it can get colorful quick. And, you know, I explained, and I'll give you this, and this will be the last thing I say. I know, you know, when I started this process, it was very hard for me to even talk to Wendy about it. Because the things that was in my head were scaring me. If they're scaring me, how's it going to with my children and with my wife? What are they going to think? You know, I'm not the strong dad. I'm not the strong husband. I was broken. I still am broken. I'm working on it. It's a day by day. But I didn't want to scare nobody, so I didn't share it. That's why I reached out, and that's why I've got Lisa. Lisa can hear all my deep, dark secrets, no judgment. She's going to help me put together that plan for me to move forward. And she's going to challenge me to be a better person. And that's the one thing that I've gotten through all of this is, you know, I'm not done. Far be it. I'm not done.
Yeah.
But every day, the challenges come up.
Yeah.
And I still don't share a lot. That's on this part of my life, just because that's I'm still learning how to deal with it.
Yeah.
So
it's a process. Hey, Travis, I'm going to, this in the interest of time, this is what I'm going to say, because there's a lot more, I'm going to say, to be continued. I think there's a wealth of information that you can offer us just through your story and others. I'm always open to this type of format that we can sit and hear our brothers and sisters share their experiences. The thing that Travis has offered, one, is he wants to be a resource. So if there's someone here who is struggling with mental illness and you're like, okay, I'm struggling, I want to get help, I just don't know where to start, go see Travis. You can come see me. There are others who can help you navigate to the next step. I am not a professional counselor. I meet with folks, I talk with folks, I give spiritual advice, but my goal is to help to, you know, create a plan for care. And so there are tons of things that we can talk about in addition to what he's offered here. But thank you for this. We're way over time. And so in the interest of time, first, I just want to thank you, Travis, for just your courage and vulnerability and sharing. Was this a praise God for Travis? And thank you. you know, we're going to pray in just a second. I had planned to talk a little bit about Elijah. You know, Elijah was a prophet in the Old Testament who had a triumphant battle and contest with some false prophets some prophets of this idol Baal. He wins the battle, but then the queen Jezebel says she put a bounty out on his head, and he runs, and after this, like, this champion, like this great day, he runs away sad and gets to a point where he is begging and pleading with God for him to die. He just lost it. He was, you know, I used the word before, he was fried. And that's a position that many of us have been. You've been on top of the world. And then she says, I'm leaving you. You're on top of the world, and then your boss says, hey, we got to cut back on staff. You're fired. You're on top of the world, and then you get a call. Your son was in an accident, and he died. You're on top of the world, and something happens, and it just saps your energy. It saps your psyche. It saps, and you fall into depression. And it happens, church. It happens. It does not mean that you are inadequate. It doesn't mean that you are abnormal. In fact, it means you're absolutely normal, because God made us to feel. He made us with our mind, our psyche, and sometimes things don't go the way that they should. But what God calls us to do is to get after it and get help, seek Him out, seek others out. You know, we live in a, put that graphic up, I'm fine. How are you doing, Dion? I'm fine. Where's that graphic? With the two heads. Yeah. This is Dad on the outside. People come to me. Hey, Dion, how you doing? I'm fine. But on the inside, there's these struggles. There's these feelings. Of anyone identify with this? I'm the only one. It's not just dads, it's moms too, right? It's not just moms, it's sisters, it's brothers, we all struggle with this. And because of this, we struggle when people ask us how we're doing to tell them exactly how we're doing. For one, like, we just don't want to bother people. The other reason is that when people ask how we're doing, sometimes they really don't want to hear how we're doing. And so that's what Travis said. If you don't want to hear how we're really doing, don't ask. Just say hi and bye. I'm not suggesting that we're rude to one another. At some place, we've got to open ourselves up to one another and make it possible for us to share our struggles with each other, particularly when it comes to mental illness. And I know this is a big thing with men. It's also a big thing with women. We've got to share. What I want us to do right now is to pray. I've written a prayer that I'm going to pray. It's a prayer for healing. It's a prayer for the healing of the mental, of the mind, of the psyche. And I don't know where any of you are at in terms of your mental health or mental illness. We're probably all over the map, and there's so many things that impacts our mental health. Right now, we have, you know, a sister who lost her mom, and another sister who lost her mother-in-law, and you know that's a moment that impacts your mental health. Some more. Deeper than others, or again, this economy. I don't know where you're at, but I believe that we all could benefit from a plea to God for healing of our mental. If you're comfortable with this, what I'm going to ask you to do is to just close your eyes and to position yourself in what's called the position of receiving, which is palms to the sky, which is just a way of saying, God, I want to receive this. I want to receive this healing. Go ahead, close your eyes, get in that position if you like. But whether you get in that physical position or not, please receive this prayer. We're gonna pray right now.